Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, we have a sad story to tell today. Normally, I start with the action, but today we have a very sad story about the loss of a NASCAR driver, Greg Biffle. So we'll talk extensively about that in the show today. We'll also talk about what's going on with a new car in Formula One. We've got some letters to the editor from Old Car Weekly. We'll also talk about gas prices, and of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. So button up. It's going to be a little bit of a sad show today, but we're going to remember the life of Greg Biffle. Well, our first article today is from the pages of Racer magazine, and the headline reads, Greg Biffle, 1969 to 2025. Well, veteran stock car racer Greg Biffle died Thursday in a crash of his private jet at Statesville Regional Airport, along with his wife Christina and his two children, Emma and Ryder, and fellow passengers Craig Wadsworth, Dennis, and Jack Dutton. Greg Biffle was 55. A native of Vancouver, Washington, Biffle began his racing career on the short tracks of the Pacific Northwest. He first competed in NASCAR in 1995 and was the first of only three drivers to date who have won a championship in what is now the O'Reilly Auto Parts Series, better known as the Xfinity or Busch Series. That was in 2002, and the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series in 2000, as well as only being one of 36 drivers to win a race in each one of NASCAR's three Touring National Series. Greg Biffle had 19 wins in 515 career starts over 16 years in the Cup Series. His last win was coming in 2013 at Michigan. His best Cup season was 2005 when he won six races, Fontana, Texas, Darlington, Dover, and Michigan, plus the season finale at Homestead Miami Speedway. He finished second in the playoffs behind Tony Stewart. In 2017, Biffle stepped back from Cup competition to join NBC Sports and their NASCAR America show as an analyst, and he returned to make a handful of Cup starts with New York Racing in 2022. Semi-retired in the recent years, Biffle competed most recently part-time in ARCA Menard Series, having last raced in the NASCAR Truck Series for Kyle Busch Motorsports in 2019 and 2020. He also showed his versatility beyond stock cars. Biffle also raced in the International Race of Champions, Stadium Super Trucks, and the Superstar Racing Experience, better known as SRX. A longtime aviation enthusiast, Biffle purchased a helicopter to fly to races and then was credited with saving lives as a volunteer pilot flying rescue missions into western North Carolina after they were ravaged by Hurricane Helene last year. Quote, I can tell you the feeling you get when you win a race. Only drivers can tell you that, right? Biffle said at that time. Because you get that same feeling when you win a race? Well, that's the feeling you get when you're there to help people in need. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein gave tribute to Biffle's rescue efforts in social media posts. Greg Biffle lived the life of courage and compassion, stepped up for Western North Carolina after Hurricane Helene. My heart goes out to all those who loved him. It was truly a tragic crash. This article is a little bit more in depth. This is from ESPN and one of my favorite writers, Ryan McGee. And the headline reads, On the Racetrack or in the Air, Greg Biffle will be remembered as a hero. Well, it was 1986-ish in Vancouver, Washington, on a school day, as the students of Camas High School, Go Papermakers, were anxiously awaiting for their bell to ring to let them out the door and into the parking lot for that signified freedom. Now, Camas Police Chief Don Cheney was there. He was also paying a visit to the school principal. The chief and the principal were chatting in the office. And this office had a window that overlooked the parking lot and the street that ran alongside and in front of the high school. Well, there was one particular underclassmate who knew this view very well. He had been in that principal's office more than a few times. He also knew that the police chief was in that office and thus also had that same view. So the teenager knew exactly what he was doing when he eased his Firebird directly beneath the office window and proceeded to drop the hammer, laying down a whipped cream thick cloud of blue tire smoke the length of that road, a smoky burnout cloud that was so large it took 5 minutes drifting directly into the office principal's office view. Now, the police chief didn't even need to ask who that was. He knew the car. Heck, he had a photo posted on the bulletin board of the police station. His officers had issued so many tickets to the driver of that banana yellow Pontiac, they all knew him on a first name basis. Quote, yes. Before that name was famous, or around here it was infamous, Cheney recalled in 2006, sitting in that same office and laughing. Greg Biffle. Well, Greg Biffle lived a stock car racing origin story that would either write as a perfect NASCAR movie script or for ourselves actually thought it was possibly believable. He hailed not from the southeastern bullrings or NASCAR's incubator. He did not race the funky modified tour in the Northeast or the dirt tracks of the Midwest or even the high deserts of the Southwest that produce so many wheelmen and women. I'd like to say he was, as Greg would say, I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. I was born on the wrong side of the river, the Mississippi River. Well, Biffle started blasting around town on a motorcycle when he was 5 years old, and he bought the Firebird when he was 14. Eventually, his father took him to Portland Speedway, a fairground track that was a half mile long, and was also had a movie drive-in screen on the backstretch and a drain cover that was squarely in Turn 4 racing groove. Dad's goal? Get him off the streets. And it worked. Now, Biff and his friends started building race cars with the goal of winning enough local races to catch the eye of a NASCAR Cup Series team owner. That didn't work. By the time he started winning enough, he was too old. He was already pushing 30, and he was way too far away, about 3,000 miles away from the NASCAR racing shops of North Carolina. Well, with $0 remaining in his racing bank account and 0 minutes remaining on his career countdown clock, he towed his late model street stock to Tucson, Arizona, to participate in an ESPN TV series titled Winter Heat. Now, NASCAR champion turned ESPN analyst Benny Parsons was chatting with Biffle on the Tucson Raceway infield. He was so impressed with Biffle, he called Jack Roush, one of those team owners back in North Carolina, and sight unseen, this was way before the internet was jammed full of video clips, Roush put Biffle in one of his NASCAR Craftsman truck rides in 1998. Well, the kid from the streets of Vancouver, Washington came back. Well, in a bad way. He wrecked so many F-150s, Roush presented him with a negative incentive. If he wrecked once and the crew determined it was his fault, well, it would cost him $10,000. If it happened a second time, it was $20,000. A third, $40,000. Biffle told him, there will not be a fourth time. And there wasn't. He won 9 races the following season and the truck title in 2000. The next year, he won Rookie of the Year in the Xfinity Series. He followed that up with a title. And then in 2002, he made his Cup Series debut. The next year, he became the first driver to win Rookie of the Year in all 3 of NASCAR's Touring Series. He finished second to Tony Stewart in 2005 for the Cup title fight and third to Jimmy Johnson in 2008. By the time his Cup career wound down in 2016, he had won 19 times, collected 13 pole positions, and had finished ninth or better in the season standings 6 times. Now, the reality was is that he probably should have never won races in Portland, but he did, just in the nick of time. He probably shouldn't have tried to go to Tucson because he didn't have any money, but he did, just in the nick of time. That conversation with Benny Parsons, stopping wrecking and started winning, all just in the nick of time. All with his career pushed right up against the edge of oblivion. You know, I hear NASCAR fans always talking about the fact that they find a hard time finding a true old school driver, one that had to grind their way into the series instead of buying their way into the Cup garage. Now, Biffle said this in 2010. When he had finished 6th in the championship standings and won 2 races that year. Sometimes I want to grab them and shake them and say, dude, I am right here. Look, I still have grease under my fingernails. Some of it is from 30 years ago, building my own late model stock cars. It's mixed in probably with some of the truck I was working on just last night. Well, real racers have always known about Biffle. He first appeared on the NASCAR Hall of Fame ballot 2 years ago. And in the voting room last spring, his name was mentioned by the voting panel, described as blue-collar and a throwback. Ultimately, he came up short, and his case was the kind that was carried forward in the years that had signified that it'll happen soon momentum, which has paid off for many inductees. Another word that came up in the room that last May, one attached to Biffle like a lug nut on a tire for more than a year now, is hero. Late in September of 2024, after Hurricane Helene unleashed an unprecedented amount of floodwater and damaged the same state that had served as the heart of NASCAR, Biffle also moved by this, struggles, he jumped into the cockpit of his own personal helicopter and flew into the Appalachians looking for people to help. He did so without request or permission. That's the same spirit that kid from in front of the high school did, not seeking to outrun those in uniform this time, but to aid in their efforts. He plucked stranded victims off of mountains, posted videos of those who couldn't get in there with the hopes that someone else could, dropped off supplies anywhere and everywhere they were needed. Biffle did this for weeks. Yeah, I had a guy ask me the other day, how much is all this costing me, Biffle said, at the height of when he was flying dozens of missions per day, most of those out of the same airport where he and his family and three others died in an airplane crash on Thursday morning. Man, do you realize how fortunate I've been? The life I've been able to live since Jack Roush took a chance on me, that was my dream. My dream came true. I have had more than I've ever wanted. How much is this costing me? I think about how much this hurricane cost those people up there. Those are all NASCAR fans. We've talked about this before, and I worried that I'm not going to be able to give back to the people who are here, and that's the reason. I've been able to live this life because of them. Well, maybe this is the answer I was looking for, because it sure found me, didn't it? Well, his last Cup start was back in 2022. He was standing next to me at the pre-race ceremonies at the Daytona 500. He was starting 28th in an HCBU-sponsored Chevy. He knew he wasn't going to win the race. He also probably knew that this was his last time to be in the Great American Race. That morning, we talked mainly about the aircraft flying overhead, the Goodyear blimp, the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, and at that time, Air Force One also buzzed the track. He was obsessed with being in the air. Well, that too is very old school NASCAR. Biffle was the product of the 2000s when every racer owned at least one airplane and many had a helicopter too. Even as his career was moving into the rearview mirror, unlike many of his contemporaries, he kept his aircraft. He loved flying too much not to figure a way out just to keep doing it. Well, back in the day, NASCAR legends such as Curtis Turner and Joe Weatherly were known for flying themselves to the races. Despite little or no formal training, they would bang wings as they raced to the track, eyeballing roads for navigation. Cale Yarborough once simultaneously flew his airplane while fending off a bear that he thought was asleep in the back that had woken up and moved into the cockpit. Well, private air travel is necessary to live a racer's life, especially at the peak of their careers. Sponsors' obligations, but lost and missed becomes routine, but this is still scary stuff. There is a danger that we forget about until something goes wrong, until someone gets careless, or a lack of experience that once charmed life suddenly becomes as an exposed danger. Let's think about drivers that we've lost, Alan Kulwicki and Davey Allison, Hendrix Motorsports family, a near tragic incident involving Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his family. Even Roush has crashed his airplanes more than once, for which Greg Biffle loved to poke fun at his old boss. In other words, NASCAR flying is very much like NASCAR racing itself. We become used to the risk that we forget about it until someone is taken away. And Greg Biffle and six others that were on that plane were taken away from us. But the real lesson here to appreciate is the here and now. Hug the necks of your loved ones while you can. Take those chances to make your dreams come true, even if they come as far away from Vancouver, Washington is from Daytona International Speedway. And what the heck, why not drop the hammer in front of the principal's office while the police chief is looking? The last time I talked to Greg Biffle was about 2 weeks ago. I had driven through Chimney Rock, North Carolina, an area he frequented after Hurricane Helene and flying those rescue missions, and I wanted to tell him that they still couldn't believe everything that he had done for them. Quote, well, you use Use what you earn to help those who lost what they earned, Greg Biffle said to me. We only get one shot at this deal, so why waste it? Rest in peace, Greg Biffle. You are truly a great man, and we have been blessed to have your presence on this planet. In the mood a little bit, how about a little weird and unusual automotive news? This is actually from TMZ, not normally where I get my information. And it says, Waymo, way no, 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 as Waymo drives into a police standoff. Well, if driverless cars are the future, we might see more of this. A Waymo took a left turn smack dab into the middle of a police standoff, and it is on viral video. Well, this video is spread on social media of a driverless rider service vehicle taking a left turn in downtown Los Angeles, cruising right into the middle of a crossfire scene. The problem is the Waymo goes right past the man who's on the ground facing next to the truck as LAPD and officers line up behind and shout commands. For dramatic effect, an LAPD helicopter is circling above. Folks in the video can chuckle when they hear the bumbling Waymo driver drive right into the middle of this storm. Now, a rep for Waymo tells TMZ, the vehicle cleared the scene in a matter of seconds and the passengers inside made it safely to their destination. Well, the Waymo rollout in Los Angeles hasn't been out without its speed bumps. A car got pulled over in Beverly Hills for an illegal turn, and Waymo suspended service this summer when cars were torched in protest over immigration raids. Plus, we've also seen Waymos get stuck in fast food drive-throughs and take riders around and around in circles instead of getting them into the airport. Horse and buggy, anyone? So that's a pretty funny story about the Waymo. Thank goodness no one was hurt. Formula One has a new car coming out, and the headline reads, DRS is out, overtake boost is in, and that's what is behind the new terminology for Formula One in 2026. Well, Formula One and the FIA have finalized new terminology that is required for the 2026 cars amid a radical change in regulations. The 2026 rules will provide more electrical energy being available as a part of the power unit, close to a 50-50% split of the internal combustion engine, while the active aerodynamics will also come into use. There will be overtaking aids and configurations that have all been tested with fan focus groups comprising of new, existing, and core followers of the sport. To simplify, here are the terms of the upcoming new technology. Well, replacing DRS, the new aid for overtaking will simply be called overtake, with drivers allowing who are within 1 second of the car in front of them to be able to deploy an additional energy for wheel-to-wheel battles. This is separate to the boost function the cars will have when drivers need to use the energy recovery system, or the ERS, to deploy energy when is needed. Now, the active aerodynamics are probably the biggest change from the car's perspective, with two separate modes, one called straight mode and one called corner mode. The corner mode is made effective and has the full effect of the ground force of the car, allowing maximum performance of the aerodynamics through the corners. And in the straight mode, the front and rear wing flaps open up to reduce drag, providing an increase in top speed using less energy. This configuration is only available to cars in certain designated areas on the circuit and will be defined by straightaways and minimum lengths. So all these changes to Formula One are going to hopefully have better on-track performance, because many Formula One races kind of turned into a little bit of a parade with not a lot of passing and overtaking. So I'm excited to see this new car and see how the performance is starting in 2026. Well, one of my favorite magazines is Old Car Weekly. I love reading the letters back to the editors. There's a couple one I want to share with you today. This one's called Canadian Ambulance. Well, I want to say how much I enjoyed David Rubin's November 1st story on the Lamar Krause 1968 Pontiac Grand Parisian. I've always been fascinated by these Canadian cars that are just different enough from their U.S. counterparts. Now, one thing that I wish that had been mentioned in this feature was the Grand Parisian four-door hardtops, and even station wagons were cataloged. Imagine a Bonneville or a Grand Safari wagon with a Grand Prix nose. Now, so far, I'd been unable to find an image on it in my archive drives, But I am also very keen to share with you that I did find a photo that has long been circulated on the Professional Car Society circles of a wood-paneled 1967 Grand Parisian Safari wagon used as an ambulance in British Columbia. I know everyone who enjoyed David Rubin's story will get a big kick out of seeing this Grand Parisian Safari ambulance with a Grand Prix nose. And I'm looking at this car, and it's got all the lights on it because it's an ambulance. It's also got the wood paneling, and the front end is very different. This is the cool Grand Prix nose that was not on these wagons here in the United States. All right, next one. Why are there more Chevys? Well, I'm responding to Angelo Van Bogart's editorial asking, where have all the Fords gone? Why are there so few 1955 and 1956 Fords these days compared to their Chevrolet contemporaries when they were produced in similar quantities? And by some counts, the Fords were comparatively, if not, built better. I think the answer simply is Chevrolet had better component compatibility, interchangeability, and broader aftermarket support. For example, almost any Chevrolet engine and or transmission could be up until the 90s would be bolting right into a 1955 or 1956 Chevy. Rear end sections were interchangeable from 55 through 64, and the performance aftermarket companies embraced the small block Chevy early, with many considering it to be the successor to the ubiquitous Ford Flathead, the historic leader in low-cost performance. Now, many Chevy dealers even had trim and body parts available for these cars from the 50s into the 70s, almost 20 years later. While some used parts were very plentiful, and the Tri-5 Club's enthusiasts soon started following and founding many thriving and dedicated reproduction parts industries made available to all those who looking for parts. I suggest this compatibility and the support helped keep more and more of these on the road longer, also building and maintaining a longer and lasting fan base. And that's from John Pentecost. And I would absolutely agree with that. Working part-time in a classic car restoration shop, we do not see very many Fords of that age as far as sedans. We see lots of trucks, and we see tons of 55, 56, and 57 Chevys. So that answer, or that comment from the person writing that article, was right on point. I want to remind everybody, we are not that far from Barrett Jackson, and this year, the 2026 auction boasts many professionally built and award-winning customs and resto mods. Well, the world's greatest collector car auction will feature an extensive mix of award-winning and professionally built custom and resto mod vehicles for the 2026 auction, which will start on January 17th and go through January 25th. Custom builder from Jeff Haynes has many cars that are also going to be coming up for auction. He's got the Corvettes. A famous split window coupe is going to be exciting to see. Also a 1970 Plymouth Barracuda that's going to be powered by a NASCAR V8 that packs 900 horsepower. Yeah, 900 horsepower. Well, if you want some more information right now, you can go to Barrett-Jackson.com for more information. And as we get a little bit closer, we will be talking about that. But don't forget Barrett Jackson coming up starting on January 17th. Well, time to talk a little gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States, folks, has dropped to $2.85 per gallon. Arizona, right now, our average gas price is $3.09. Over in New Mexico, $2.69. Colorado, $2.45. Utah, $2.70. Over in Nevada, $3.41, and in California, $4.30. If you head a little east over to Texas, $2.47. And in Oklahoma, right now, average gas price is $2.31 per gallon. Well, if you happen to be down in Tucson or live in that neighborhood, you need to be buying as much gas as you can. The Costco has gas at $2.27 a gallon. That's on Tucson Marketplace. The Shell station on Speedway Boulevard, $2.27 as well. So there's multiple stations in Tucson with that cheap gas. The Maverick station in Littlefield at 231. And let's see. Yep, all the cheap gas is in Tucson. Also another gas station in Littlefield, the TA Express at 234. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. If you live out in Apache Junction, the Fry's station on Old West Highway, $2.69. The Marathon station, $2.69. In Gilbert, Sam's Club at $2.74. Sam's Club in Tempe on Rio Salado Parkway at $2.74. Costco on 33rd Avenue and Grand is at $2.79. And the 76 station on 27th Avenue in Phoenix, that's at $2.79 as well. So you should be able to find gas under $3 a gallon. That's right, folks. Under $3 a gallon gas is out there, and it is fairly plentiful. We've come to that time of the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I have a tire question for you. I used to live at 8,000 feet in the mountains of Colorado. I had a double switchback driveway on a north-facing hill. I used real snow tires in the winter and then stored them in the summer. Now, I recently moved to sunny New Mexico, and I have now remounted the snow tires and have been using them year-round because they have so much tread remaining. They're about 15 years old. Are they still safe? And that's from Joe. Well, no, Joe, this is a bad idea. The problem with tires is that rubber degrades over time just from contact with the ozone in our air. So even if the tires still have tread left, they could still be ready to crumble. I have a neighbor who told me that she had a 20-year-old toilet plunger that she needed to use one day. She said she stuck it in the offending bowl and it fell completely apart. Then she called me, asked me what to do. I told her to buy a new plunger and to leave me out of it. So I bet you'll be looking closely at your tires. You'll see that there's a lot of cracks on the sidewalls. That's a sign that the rubber is driving out and getting ready to fail. Now, most manufacturers recommend replacing your tires every 6 years, regardless of the tread. And if we take out the profit motivation and the lawyer liability recommendations, I think you're way past any reasonable expiration date. Now, the other approach is your snow tires aren't as good in driving in the summer or as the all-season tires are as in snowier condition. Snow tires are noisier, but they're more aggressive, and their block tread puts less rubber on the ground. That means your car would steer poorly and brake poorly. So I'd bite the bullet and buy yourself a new set of all-season tires, and maybe the kids in your neighborhood could use a new tree swing, and I'd also think about maybe replacing that bathroom plunger. Well, that's all the time we have for the car show today, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.